It was the famed evangelist of the late 1800s, D.L. Moody, who said, "Character is what you are in the dark." Yet in our culture, success, beauty, and status take the limelight personal, while character and integrity seem to be lost virtues. Today on Insight for Living, you'll hear Chuck Swindoll continue his series called Character Counts. We're turning to a somewhat obscure story found in the 25th chapter of 1 Samuel, where we find a heroic woman respond to a crisis with sensitivity and wisdom. We'll find fresh application from her courageous example. Chuck has titled today's message, "The Discernment of Abigail."
The wind beneath David's wings in the 25th chapter of 1 Samuel was a woman named Abigail, one of those lesser-known ladies in the Bible, and yet one of the great ones of the Old Testament. Her character trait, as we're going to see, is the trait of discernment. First, a little background. When you get to the 25th chapter of 1 Samuel, you find David still running for his life, hiding from Saul. Saul is the king. He's older. David is the king-elect. He's younger. But David is the more popular of the two as a result of slaying the giant Goliath of Gath. And because of intense jealousy, which drove Saul to insanity, David had to run for his life. While on his journeys in the wilderness, he came to a cave named Adullam. In the cave, there gathered ultimately 600 men, malcontents, people in debt, people in distress, people in need. And those men looked to David in the cave to help equip them for life. Now, at the present time, in 1 Samuel 25, David and these 600 men are not in a cave. They're working the hillsides outside Carmel, providing a protective service for rich ranchers at Carmel. David and his men were involved in sort of a secret protective service, keeping the wild tribes from the hills from invading the flocks and the herds and annihilating the ranches and robbing them down below. David never called attention to his work, but it was a common thing for some kind of gratuity to be given when it was sheep shearing time. As a matter of fact, that's exactly where we find ourselves according to the last part of verse 2 in 1 Samuel 25. While he was shearing his sheep in Carmel, verse 4, David heard in the wilderness that Nabal, that's the rich owner, was shearing his sheep. So it was time for a little pay to come back to David and his men. As a result of this protection they provided, the sheep owners would give money in return. Now, so much for the scene, the background. Let's meet the three main characters in the 25th chapter. First is Nabal, second is Abigail, and third is David. Nabal, according to verse 2, is a man in Maon whose business was in Carmel. Nabal was very rich. Not only wealthy, verse 3 tells us he was also harsh. See the way verse 3 ends? Nabal was harsh. Not only harsh, the word means hard, stubborn, stiff. I would add the word tight. He was financially tight. And he was evil in his dealings. According to verse 17, last sentence, he was such a worthless man that no one could speak to him. Those are the words of one of the servants who said those words to Nabal's wife. You'd be interested to know that his name, Nabal, is Fool. Unless you think it simply means mischievous, hear Alfred Edersheim from his Old Testament history. Fool is an ominous designation in the Old Testament. The fool represented the headstrong, self-willed person who followed his own course as if there were no God alike in heaven or on earth. Fool is appropriate. Coarse, uncouth, crude. You know, some people's names don't fit. Others do. His did. Somebody sent me a picture of what looks like a lost and found board at a campground. And I don't know the source of this, but they photographed one of the lost and found items. And this little thing reads, "Lost dog, three legs, left ear gone, right eye missing, broken tail, recently castrated, answers to the name of Lucky." Now, that dog is not well named. That's not a good name for that dog. Somebody needs to name him Pity or something, but Lucky is not the right. Nabal is the right name for this fool. And don't doubt it. Don't hedge from it. According to verse 25, his own wife says, "For Nabal is his name, and as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him." The Bible doesn't hedge when it comes to pen portraits. It paints people, warts and all. And Nabal was one of those individuals that it doesn't dodge the truth about. Now, you might think he had a wife like himself. You might think the guy who was coarse and uncouth and crude and ornery had found a wife like himself. Wrong. As a matter of fact, according to this passage of Scripture, she is one of the most discerning, gracious women you will ever read about anywhere. Her name is Abigail, according to this third verse. She was a woman who was intelligent, and it means just that. She is bright. She's sharp. She had a good head on her shoulders. She not only thought, she thought ahead. And she not only thought ahead, she thought ahead wisely, so that she planned in advance what was best. Bright woman. On top of that, verse 3 assures us she was beautiful in form, literally. So she had a good shape. She had a good face. She had an attractive appearance. She was good within. She was beautiful without. You're going to fall in love with this woman before I'm through, I can assure you. She's a rare, rare woman indeed. She's not a statue emerging from a marble slab. She's a diamond. She's a diamond. There's a proverb that says an excellent wife is a crown to her husband. She is a crown to Nabal. Now, on top of all these other things, she's courageous. Her discernment worked its way out as she stood in the gap on behalf not only of her husband, but on behalf of a king who was about to make a bad, bad mistake. Now, before I go any further, some of you are thinking what I thought when I first got into this biography. You're thinking, how could a woman like that wind up with a klutz like this? Well, believe me, it still goes on. Sometimes it's the husband who winds up with a wife like that. Sometimes it's a wife who winds up with a husband like that. In those days, parents often chose the mates for their children. That probably is what happened. Mom and Dad picked Nabal to marry Abigail. It's possible that they met and married, but Nabal became increasingly more coarse as time passed. Whatever. She has a real assignment on her hands. She lives every day of her life with a man like this. The third main character is David, the fellow we mentioned earlier. He's the leader of 600. He lives in the field. He's the king-elect. He is on his way to the throne, but in the meantime, God is shaping him and developing within him character through difficult times. David and his men have done a very faithful job protecting Nabal's flocks. According to verse 15 of this chapter, "The men were very good to us," says one of the servants. "We were not insulted, nor did we miss anything, as long as we went about with them while we were in the fields. They were a wall to us," Abigail. "They were a wall to us, both by night and by day. All the time we were with them, tending the sheep. Now, that's a faithful service. By now, you're beginning to drift in your mind and already anticipate the plot, aren't you? Here is a band of men who have more than earned their money, and here is an ornery, coarse tightwad of a sheep owner who isn't about to pay them. And in between the two, we have the makings of murder. When you add the flaming selfishness of Nabal and the short fuse of David, you've got an explosion about ready to happen. And the secret is the discernment of Abigail. There are a couple or three conflicts that are very natural that would emerge from the passage of Scripture. First is the husband-wife conflict. They are different in every way. Nabal sees things one way, Abigail sees them another. Nabal treats people one way, Abigail treats them another. Nabal operates from his belly. He operates from his emotions. She operates from her brain. She thinks things through. She loves the Lord with all of her heart. Flowing through her mind and through her emotions is a beautiful blend of discernment and wisdom. The right words, graciously handling situations. But she's a realist. Don't doubt for a moment. She thinks she's living with a good man. She doesn't think that. She knows better than that. But she stayed with him. There's a second conflict, and that's between the employee and the employer. You see, there was no sheepherders' union back then. There was no board you could turn to, no committee to handle the grievance. You were really at the mercy of the sheep owner. Let me show you. Verse 5. David sent 10 young men, and David said to the young men, "Go up to Carmel, visit Nabal, and greet him in my name. And thus you shall say," watch the shaloms in this statement he gives them, "have a long life. Shalom to you. Shalom to your house. Shalom be to all that you have." A wonderful greeting. Peace, peace, peace. David has no interest in getting any more than he deserved. He's willing to take whatever Nabal gives. In fact, look at what he tells them, verse 7. "I have heard that you have shearers. Now your shepherds have been with us, and we have not insulted them, nor have they missed anything all the days they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, and they will tell you. Therefore, let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we have come on a festive day. Please," look at how gracious this is, "give whatever you find at hand to your servants and to your son David." Doesn't ask for 10%, doesn't ask for 15%, doesn't ask for enough food to help them live for the next several weeks. He says, "Give whatever. We'll take whatever you give." Now, David had trained his men to say that kind of thing. Listen to the employer. Listen to the sheep owner. "When David's young men came, they spoke to Nabal according to all the words in David's name. And then they waited." Isn't that an eloquent statement? Then they waited. There wasn't snapping of fingers. There wasn't hurry up, get the money together. There wasn't a sense of obligation. They simply said their piece, stood back, put their hands behind their backs, and waited silently. They waited. Nabal answered David's servants and said, "Who is David? Can't you hear him? And who is the son of Jesse?" There are many servants today who are each breaking away from his master. "Shall I then take my bread and my water and my meat that I've slaughtered for my shearers and give it to men whose origin I do not know?" Sounds like a guy used to work for, doesn't it? Or maybe somebody used to be married to. Sounds like somebody you've met in days past. There is an absolute thanklessness about him. There isn't one grain of gratitude. I mean, with a passing of his hand, he said, "Who in the world is David? I don't know anything about such man." He didn't check. He didn't ask. Because remember what we just read? You couldn't talk to Nabal. Stubborn that he was, he had his mind made up. What a terrible way to live. Now, meanwhile, back in the hills, David has got the charcoal broiler going. His stomach is growling. He's anticipating barbecued rack of lamb, mutton stew. I mean, he's got it all planned. Verse 12. So David's young men retraced their way and went back, and they came and told him according to all these words. Now wait a minute, before you get ticked off at David, put yourself in his sandals. I told you he was testy. He's about headed up to here. And when he gets word from the servants as to Nabal's response, boom, the lid blows off. Let me show you. David said to his men, "Gird on your sword, saddle up, fix bayonets. We're going to put Nabal out of his misery." That's kind of Swindoll's paraphrase of verse 13. So each man, well, of course, they're going to do anything for David. Remember, he found them in the cave. He had given them dignity. He had given them work. They'd annihilate anybody if he said, "Let's do it. Let's take their lives." They'd put their sword on and do it. There's no argument there. Each man girded on his sword, and David girded on his sword, and about 400 men went up behind David, while 200 stayed with the baggies. I mean, they're coming down the hill. They're going to get him in Carmel. Okay? You know what happens right here? You know why David does that? Well, let me explain it to you psychologically. For months, he's been saving stamps. Okay? Today, he redeems the book. Okay, let me tell you how it works. Let's just use your basic married couple. Okay? You've got a wife who takes a lot of things. She's in a gathering and her husband says something dumb and she kind of gets red and embarrassed, but she doesn't say anything. But she puts a stamp in her book. Okay? And then a couple of weeks pass and he does something else that's kind of stupid, and she doesn't say anything. She just puts a row of stamps in the book this time. And then a couple of days later, he says something else is off the wall, and another row of stamps. Finally, Sunday morning comes, and you're getting ready for church, and you get ready before she does. So you run out in the car, and you hang on the horn. All of a sudden, boom! She's out the front door. She's got the door open. She grabs you by the throat. She's choking you. And you said, I just honked the horn. No, I cashed in my book today. That's what I did. That's what happens with David. I mean, when this finally hit the fan, boom, David was undone. Put on the swords. I mean, we're talking skewered Nabal. You know, toasted buns, the whole thing. I mean, and David's mind is wild stuff. Wild stuff. He's acting completely, completely out of character. And let me tell you something. That's the most dangerous moment in life. Now I'm serious. It's the most dangerous moment in life. When you have saved and saved and saved, and the moment comes that the last straw is added to the camel, and you'll kill. Yes, you will. You'll kill. Your mind blocks out restraint. Your mind pushes aside those controls that have held you together. And you think the most damnable thoughts, and you would plan the most insane plan, even if it would ruin your record, because you have had it. And that's when you need an Abigail. You need a soft hand on your wrist. F.B. Meyer, in his book on David, entitles the chapter on Abigail, "A Cool Hand on a Hot Head." There's a cool washcloth on David's forehead. Look at this. This is wonderful. I told you you'd fall in love with her. Here's an example. Remember, she's married to Nabal. This is her moment to get rid of him. Don't act like you didn't think that. You thought that earlier, too. One of the young men told Abigail, verse 14, "Behold, David sent messengers from the wilderness to greet our master, and he scorned them. Yet the men were very good to us." We read this earlier. "We were not insulted, nor did we miss anything as long as we went about with them while we were in the field. They did a good job. They were a wall to us both night and day, all the time while we were tending the sheep. Now therefore know and consider what you should do." I mean, they're at the mercy of this wife. Notice they talk to the wife. You can't talk to Nabal's. You can't reason with men like that. "Help us. Evil is plotted against our master, and furthermore against all of his household, and he is such a worthless man, no one can speak to him." Abigail is wonderful here at this moment. Look at her go into action. Remember, she's a crown to her husband. She hurried and took, look at the grocery list. Look at the list. 200 large loaves of bread, 2 jugs of wine, 5 sheep already roasted, 5 measures of roasted grain, that works out to 2 full bushels, 100 clusters of raisins, 200 fig cakes, even a little dessert. First catering service ever presented in time. She's got it all together. Now, while she's getting all of that together, you do this, you cook that, you be sure those are ready. You put this one on that donkey, you put this one on that one. Let's wrap these together. Let's keep this in mind. She is in her mind thinking, how can I approach this angry man? He's on his way. He's got murder in his mind. He's the king elect. He can't do that. What can I do to stop him? How can I settle it? That's what discernment does. It thinks through all the channels, and it doesn't get involved in the panic of the moment. I hope you have a mate like that. There's no place for panic in her life. She's very methodically thinking it through.
Well, there's much more from this story we need to explore. The king-elect, David, was ready to take down his enemy, but Abigail was desperately looking for a way to defuse his vengeance. You're listening to Insight for Living and a message from Chuck Swindoll titled The Discernment of Abigail. To hear this message again or for more information, visit insightworld.org. We'll hear a closing comment from Chuck in just a moment, so please stay with us. You can order all 12 sermons in the series called Character Counts by going online or calling right now. And there's a Bible Companion Study Guide available, too. Online, go to insight.org. Or if you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. Well, just last week, we introduced a brand new resource. This exclusive tool from Insight for Living represents decades of biblical research by our team, called the Understanding Heaven Passport. Chuck?
Death is an unpleasant subject. We tend to avoid the reality of passing from this life into the next. But once we pull back the curtain of fear and discover what God reveals about our eternal home after death, it opens a whole new vista, an inspiring panoramic view of God's amazing provisions for those who love Him and follow Him. Through my many years in ministry, I've received thousands of questions about heaven. Some of those questions come from curiosity and even soul-searching. Tragically, some of those questions come from superstition. Others are posed in the midst of grief, while a surviving husband or wife is trying to cope with the loss of a loved one. Responding to all these pressing questions, we put together a convenient resource tool filled with illustrations and charts that represents decades of research and Bible study. It's a wonderful little publication we've called Understanding Heaven Passport. In this resource, you'll enjoy concise answers to honest and very practical questions like, is heaven for real? Questions about theology, concerning the validity of soul sleep and purgatory and the New Jerusalem, and questions of curiosity like, Will there be marriage in heaven? Will we know each other in heaven? What will life be like in heaven? I highly recommend this resource to you. Request your copy right now in the popular passport size format from your many friends at Insight for Living, Understanding Heaven.
It's colorful, it's concise, with simple responses to complex questions. And a copy is yours when you give a donation of any amount. Insight for Living is made possible through the voluntary donations of people who value Chuck's teaching, share his passion for God's Word, and want to see these daily visits continue. And when you give today, we'll say thank you by providing the Understanding Heaven passport. Online, go to insight.org. Or if you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. There's a wealth of free resources available to you on our website, and we'd encourage you to go online and check it out. A growing number of listeners, for instance, are accessing Chuck's teaching by using our convenient mobile app. And you can follow Chuck on Twitter or join the conversation of like-minded people on our Facebook page. You can even view a variety of video conversations on subjects of special interest to you. You'll find all these resources, links, downloads, and more at insight.org. Don't miss tomorrow's program when Chuck Swindoll completes this story about the discernment of Abigail. That's Tuesday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, The Discernment of Abigail, was copyrighted in 1988, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2013 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide.